We are still at that order of business, bills on third reading and final passage. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 251.
House Bill 251, introduced by Representative Brechtel, an act relating to public health and safety, abortion, ultrasound information, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to third reading amendment number one to House Bill 251 and would ask for your favorable consideration. What this amendment does is the two things that were mentioned yesterday in the conversation there, and on page 1, line 13 through 16, it inserts at least 24 hours prior, and on page 2, after line 15, it reinserts the original language under number 2 to save the life or preserve the health of an unborn child. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I would call for the question or answer questions.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 251, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 251 has been adopted. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will withdraw third reading amendment number 2 at this time.
Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 251 has been withdrawn. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move third reading amendment number 3, and I will withdraw it at the appropriate time. Folks, this is something we have never done before in Wyoming, which is regulate the doctor-patient relationship. And the reason that I bring this amendment is since we first debated this a couple of days ago, I have been receiving lots of emails from physicians in my community who are really opposed to this concept. And they're not obstetricians or gynecologists. Oh, maybe one of them was. One was my children's pediatrician. But we need to think about what we're doing here. There's a laudable goal to this bill, which is to encourage folks to think about bringing babies to term, either keeping them themselves or making them available for loving families for adoption. That is truly a laudable goal. But there are some things we can't legislate, and we should not regulate. And the doctor-patient relationship is one of them. And the reason is we cannot imagine all of the scenarios that could be involved in that relationship. And we have to think about what it means for doctors when we put in statute what is informed consent. What if they don't do exactly what is now in the statute, which is actually now a pretty detailed list of things they have to go through, or they will not be compliant with the statute? They can get sued. Basic tort law. You don't do informed consent, it's a tort. Torts 101, as I recall, although I haven't had it for 20 plus years. Close to 30. It's a tort. What are we doing to the doctors? Or they could be reported to the medical board. And now, although I was off the floor, which is why I'm breathless, the unborn child language is back in. Does that mean someone can bring a wrongful death action? I don't know. And when does this regulation of the medical community stop? Are we going to tell a doctor that They need to show their patient pictures of clogged arteries. Are we going to tell a doctor that to get somebody to stop smoking, they've got to show those ghastly pictures of lungs exposed to cigarette smoke? That is a real legitimate fear on the part of our medical community. Why are we doing this? It's a laudable goal. Do not get me wrong. I would love to see babies made available to adoptive families. But there are things we can't regulate. Some things we can't fix. And meddling in the doctor-patient relationship, telling people who take an oath that they have to follow how to advise their patients in circumstances that we cannot imagine is very offensive to our friends in the medical community. And, you know, this session, we don't have any doctors, but we do have folks who are active in the medical community. This is not what we are about as a body, is telling doctors how to do their jobs. And they have a very legitimate fear around the state that, you know, where will it end? When will we stop? Well, is this just the beginning of a new round of regulation of physicians? Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I very, very much appreciated the debate and the concerns over this issue, but let me just remind you, in America today, women still die by abortion. There's 140,000 times every year there are women have complications from abortion. There's things like cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, infertility, hysterectomies, disease, miscarriages. There's many things that happen. 140,000 incidents in America. Women, quite often after having an abortion, are traumatized later on by what's happened. They turn to drugs, alcohol, suicide. At least 15 studies indicate that there is harm to women by abortion. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time, second time, prior to the sponsor, second time, Representative Throne? Oh, there you are right there. I was looking for you back there. I apologize. Representative Throne.
Tried to trick you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. This bill, and the, you know, my final thoughts that I want to share with you, women are not stupid. We do not lose our brains when we become pregnant. And I have been pregnant 4 times, 1 miscarriage, the, you know, natural miscarriage. We do not lose our ability to think, our ability to communicate with our doctor, and our ability to make decisions. The women of Wyoming do not need the 60 of us here to tell them what they need to know when they go see their doctor. Informed consent is a matter of law. It's something doctors are obligated to do. And if we write something in statute, we are interfering with one of the most private, fundamental relationships anyone will ever have, their relationship with their doctor. And I think it was said best by the good lady, the good, gentle rancher mother-to-be from the middle of the state who's not with us today. And I asked her permission this morning, and I just wanted to quote her from what she said the last time we had this discussion. My point is simple. What we have works. When I go to the doctor, it is the most private thing you can imagine. I want myself, I want my husband, and I want my doctor there. I don't want any government. Thank you for the good debate, and I will withdraw the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 251 has been withdrawn. House Bill 251 having been read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Licorie.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman. Gay, Gingery, Goggles,
no.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi, Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller, Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
aye.
Patterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
no.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
no.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
no.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Lockhart, no to aye. Are there any other changes? Kasparic, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 34 ayes, 25 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 251, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 251 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 256.
House Bill 256, introduced by Representative Kraft, an act relating to domestic and sexual violence regarding Wyoming safe homes, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I think actually it's the good representative from Sweetwater County that you need to call on.
Oh, this is a joint amendment. Very well. Representative Kraft.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The good majority leader will bat cleanup on this one. I bring to you third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 256. I would ask for your favorable consideration on both the amendment and the bill. As I mentioned to you when I presented the bill, it's the product of a lot of study, a lot of thought, a lot of work by a lot of different individuals. And I really appreciated the debate that we had here. I appreciated the suggestions that were made, the comments that were made that I believe will make the bill stronger. So the good majority floor leader and I got together and tried to take into consideration pretty much everything we heard discussed on the floor, and hopefully we now have a really good bill that hopefully we can support. I don't want to go through page by page, paragraph by paragraph, but I do want to tell you kind of in a summary what we have done with this amendment. The first thing that we have done is we have deleted that a tenant has to give 3 days' notice. There was comment that that's really kind of onerous on the part of the landlord if they only get 3 days' notice. So we say 30 days. And that should not be construed to mean that the person is going to stay there for 30 days. They may vacate, but they're still responsible for 30 days' rent, which we thought was probably far more fair and equitable for the landlord. We also removed that because we talked about there has to be evidence, there has to be a form of proof supporting the claim, and we gave two choices. One, medical, court, or police evidence of domestic assault or sexual violence. And then we also said a statement from an employee of a victim services or rape crisis organization. That second option has been removed throughout the bill. So now it must be a support for the claim based on medical, court, or police evidence, or a copy of the protection order, which, of course, is court evidence. So that's a big change. I know there were a lot of issues on page 6 of the bill, section C. That section has been eliminated. There was a lot of talk about how in the world could we enforce that, and would we have the unintended consequence of just not ever renting to a single woman with children, because we might be faced with that. And, of course, the point being made that, you know, obviously, if I'm going to evict this person, I'm not going to be dumb enough as to say I did it because of this. I'm going to say, well, your dog was barking, or you parked in the wrong slot, or I caught you smoking, or whatever. So that entire section C has been deleted. Then going through again the evidence needing to be from either medical, court, or police. On section 8, or page 8, excuse me, section C, that was all deleted because as the good attorneys in the body pointed out, we don't need it because it's an oral lease, that portion. We also tried to make very clear, it's stated in the bill, but we tried to make very clear that if indeed locks are changed, that the payment for that is the responsibility of the tenant, whether the tenant does it or the landlord does it, that's their responsibility. Moving over on to page 11, sections B, C, and D were deleted. Again, I'm always thankful when I get good legal advice because I don't know these things. This was not needed because of the contract rights that currently exist. So that kind of in a nutshell is what we have done with the amendment that we hope will tighten this bill, make it so it's not onerous for either the tenant or the victim. And with that, I would like to yield to the good majority floor leader.
Or more than a nutshell? I don't know. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the whole jar of peanut butter. When I read this bill, I was concerned that we were creating or we were victimizing a class of people we didn't intend to victimize, because what the effect of the bill was to make it hard to rent apartments to single mothers with children. And the way this bill was written, it would just discourage people from doing that. And even though that type of fencing out is prohibited, people can figure out reasons to do that anyway. And so what the amendment does is it attempts a balancing between bad situations and rent collection. And it does it a couple ways. The first way is with the written notice provisions. It used to be 3 days and you're gone and you can't sue me for it and have a nice day. What this does is this gives the landlord 30 days in which to go out and find another tenant and allows the person who's afraid of being victimized to still be there. We increase the quality of evidence. Just the types of evidence that you would rely on. We took out the language that made the lease terminable. We took out the language that said that the landlord had to give the key within 12 hours, and because sometimes that's just frankly impossible. It just says make a good faith effort to give the key after the tenant requests that the locks be changed. We took out all of the immunity language on page 10, because we took out all of the remedies on page 11 except for the remedy for injunction, and we took out the attorney's fees, so it didn't seem like you should waive liability while you took away the remedies that you had. And so it's a balancing, and I think does a better job of addressing a bad situation while at the same time addressing the needs of landlords. And so on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move to divide the amendment, specifically line 2, page 2, line 21. I would move to make that division 1 and then the balance of the amendment division 2.
Okay. Would you repeat that?
Page 2, line 21 would be division 1 and the balance. Page 2, line 21. And then the balance of the amendment would be division 2.
So division 1 is all of the first page and then the second page down through 21, or
no,
I'm
not
following?
No, Mr. Speaker, division 1 would be essentially one line of the amendment, line 21 on page 2. Okay. And then the balance of the amendment would be division 2.
Stand by while I take a look at that. A cursory review appears to make it divisible, so if you would like to speak to, pick whichever division you'd like to speak to first.
Mr. Speaker, if I can speak to Division 1. Members of the 61st, I have some grave concerns about this bill and just how far we're sort of inserting ourselves into the landlord-tenant relationship, but one of the things that particularly concerns me about, I think the amendment fixes some of that, but you'll see sections G and H on page 10. The amendment deletes those. And concerning particularly section H, we have a bill here that requires a landlord to change locks in certain circumstances. And then with the other hand, so it's entirely possible you may have multiple tenants of a dwelling, and they're locking out one of the tenants who has a contractual right to be in that dwelling. But in this bill, we're saying you must do that. And so you're setting up a situation where logically that tenant could bring an action against the landlord for excluding them from their place of residence that they have a contractual right to be in. And you can imagine all sorts of scenarios that would create some sort of damages and liability. And yet initially, we said a landlord who changes the locks because we told him to is protected from those claims of liability. Now, with this amendment, we've taken that out and said, even though we're going to make you change the locks to somebody that has a contractual right to be in that residence, we're not going to say you're immune from liability. You're going to have to defend those lawsuits from those other tenants. And I just think that's bad policy, and I would urge you to vote against Division 1 of the amendment.
Anyone for their first time on the Division 1, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and I guess slightly for Division 1. Since we took away all of the remedies on page 11, it seemed like it wasn't that important then to give immunities. I agree that we are imposing an additional duty. But it seems like in these situations, if you act unreasonably, which is the only time you can be sued, and lose, that maybe you should be sued. And so that's why, because this is the broad brush, and for every situation you can imagine where you're wrongfully sued, there's also another situation where you're rightfully sued. And so I'm always hesitant to throw these immunity sections in here because we don't know the facts, and it's hard for us to judge. And this is an absolute broad brush language, and so that's why I asked to have it stricken.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just point out a couple of things about the bill. If indeed someone is sharing an apartment or sharing a habitation with someone who is a victim who says, I want the locks changed, that cannot be done unless they get a copy of, unless the landlord receives a copy of a protection order issued by the court. Because that thought occurred to us too. You know, what if there are multiple people there? The only way I can request a lock being changed if I have other individuals there is if I go and say, here's a copy of the court protection order protecting me from this individual. That's the only time. The other thing I would like to call your attention to is the landlord doesn't have to. Doesn't have to. What the landlord can do is say, you know, I can't make this work, and you're going to have to go. You're going to have to find somewhere else. That's the last part of the bill. But you have no less than 10 and no more than 20 days to comply with that order. Are we making exceptions? Are we somewhat rewriting things? And the good majority floor leader and I did have discussion about whether to leave this section in or take it out, and I believe he explained beautifully why we decided the way we did. But we're looking at victims. We are looking at people whose lives have been turned upside down, and we create even more greater and more punitive obstacles for them. All we are trying to do is make it a little bit easier for them to move, and I believe with the amendment we've tightened that down considerably, or easier to get locks changed if indeed that's something that is going to make them feel safe and protected in their home.
Anyone else for the first time on part one of the amendment? That is correct, right? Part one. Anyone for their second time? All those in favor of part one of third reading amendment number one to House Bill 256, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Part one of third reading amendment number one to 256 has failed. We are back on part two. Anyone as to part two? All those in favor of part two of third reading amendment number one to House Bill 256, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Part two of third reading amendment number one to 256 has been adopted. We're back on the bill, and House Bill 256, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel. Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
no.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
no.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green, Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
Pedersen,
aye. Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson excused, Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 33 aye, 26 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 256, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 256 has passed the House. We're at that order of business, reconsideration of House Bill 191. Reconsiderations? Anyone?
I apologize, Mr. Speaker.
That's okay. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having voted on the prevailing side of House Bill 191, I move reconsideration of the third reading vote on House Bill 191.
It having been moved that House Bill 191 be reconsidered, the motion will be adopted or rejected by a simple majority vote. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel. Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Illaway, Yagi, Kasparic, Croker, Crone, Lockhart, Laux, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlek.
No.
Shepperson excused. Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 27 aye, 32 no, 1 excused.
The motion for reconsideration of House Bill 191 has failed. We are at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Representative Kasparic.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I'd like to introduce some very special people from Campbell County Children's Developmental Services of Campbell County. The director, Erlene Vandeventer, and workers Bale Christensen and Kendra, I can't read my own writing. Thank you for coming.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, a few days ago, all of you received something on your desk that if you like the macabre or you like spooky movies or things like this, take some time to look at them. It's about what's happening with what I've got on top of my desk there, the zebra. What do they call those things? Mussels. They don't look like mussels, but they're really scary. And please take some time and review this a little bit about these things that could invade Wyoming. It was suggested I say don't move a mussel.
Thank you for that. Okay, we are at that order of business, the bills on consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. From the list that was prepared yesterday, please move Senate Joint Resolution 2, Senate Joint Resolution 5, Senate File 92, and Senate File 116 to the bottom of the list. We will take those up on Friday. Senate Joint Resolution 2, Senate Joint Resolution 5, Senate File 92, and Senate File 116. You should have a Xeroxed copy of a revised list. We sent that out this morning, but This is for those folks who don't have the opportunity of having that revised list delivered to their desk. The intent is today, with your permission, to go till about 4 o'clock and then adjourn. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved into committee of the whole. Representative Byrd. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to economic development, Wyoming Market Research Center. This bill was sent to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Greer, Kasparik, Lockhart, Moniz, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, excused, Byrd, Roscoe, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that bill number, or Senate file number 74 do pass. And I turn the explanation of the Senate file over to the good representative from House District 46.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you Senate File 74. Basically, all we're doing here is making some changes to Section 912106, changing the definition a little bit. If you look on page 1, line 16, we have scratched manufacturers. And then if you go to page 2, we've added small business and potential entrepreneurs. On line 3, I have scratched if a center is formed. And then the addition after that is the center may utilize the services of student interns from the University of Wyoming and community colleges to provide those students with practical marketing experience. Then if you'll notice section 2 of that, Wyoming Statute 912106B, little Romanet 1 and Romanet 2 is repealed. I don't know if you've noticed in the statute, but Romanet 2 basically says the center may utilize the services of student interns or whatever. So that basically was repealed and then added to the back of that definition on lines 4 through 7. And then Romanet 1, basically that center has been formed and that section is actually obsolete. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Question being called on...
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. And this is a really short question. Is did you consider adding county commissions to this list of persons that could receive these market research services?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Adding, Mr. Chairman, adding county commissioners as part of the... Would you restate your question, please?
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Representative Goggles.
Did the bringers of this bill consider county commissioners as a user of this service?
Representative Moniz.
Mr. Chairman, I believe they can use this service as we at the present time.
Representative Corford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on the repealer on Romanet B, or subsection B, Romanet I, or Romanet 1, excuse me. That talks about setting up, they were supposed to set up a fee schedule in order to become self-sufficient. I guess I'm just wondering, has that been set up? Did it work well? Are they self-sufficient, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now, the I don't know if you had the opportunity here not too long ago to tour the new business college and see how they function there, but I believe most of this is done there. And I am not aware of a fee. Our good chairman may be aware, but I'm not aware that they even charge a fee.
Is there any more discussion? No. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To respond to the good representative from Thermopolis, they found with their experience that it was not self-funding. That was an original intent when we drafted the bill or when the legislature did, and it just did not work. So it's not funded that way, and it's because it did not perform.
Representative Moniz?
No further comment. I totally agree with that.
Representative Korberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand this. Then they're not, if they have been charging fees, they're not going to continue to do that any longer. And do we know the status of any fees that were collected, or were they just not able to ever put it into place, Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The testimony before the committee, when the bill was worked in the interim, the statement from the University of Wyoming that there were no funds ever, no request for the research, and no funds to the university. However, after we drafted this bill, there was one request coming in, and there was no money attached to that.
Representative Moniz.
No further comment, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senate File 74, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate Bill 75 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is... Senate File 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 75. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 75, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to economic development, workforce, housing, infrastructure funds, reversion. This bill was sent to Committee 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Greer, Kasperi, Lockhart, Moniz, Stubbs, Wanitzer, Danz, Wanitzer, Dave, excused, Byrd, Roscoe. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation of Senate File 75 do pass. And I was originally going to have the explanation by the man who's chairing this meeting, and that was scheduled before I knew he was chairing it, and I think before he remembered he was chairing it. So I'll try to explain it. Committee, there was a lot of work done by this legislature over a number of years in an effort to develop workforce housing at a price that was economical and at minimum cost to the state of Wyoming. The last effort that we went through on that, the structure of the workforce housing development was passed by the House and the Senate, and at appropriations, they put $1 million in there to see who would rise to use the process that was developed and in that bill. It turned out that the $1 million didn't encourage anybody to come. There was no effort to use that money. And in addition, the market over time caught up with what was the boom growth that we had in the early part of this, the last part of the Senate, the last 10 years. And so what this bill does is it takes that million dollars that was set aside for workforce housing development and puts it back into the general fund. So the general fund will be $1 million richer with the passage of this Senate file. I urge your support.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the good chairman. If we're taking the money out, do we still need the bill?
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of the bill is to remove the million dollars and put it back into the general fund. That's the purpose of the bill, and we do need it.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 75 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 75 has passed the House. Committee of the Whole. Getting ahead of myself. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 76. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 76, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to environmental quality voluntary audit report. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Greer, Kasperi, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, excused, Byrd, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 76 do pass, and I'd turn the explanation over to the good representative from House District 32.
Representative Kasperik.
Sisters and brothers of the 61st, if we pass this bill, you will help me achieve my goal this session of being queen of the little bill. This bill is a little bill. It's essentially asking us to repeal a law that was enacted in 1995 that allowed for voluntary environmental quality audits. To date, there has been only one voluntary audit, and it came in after the date that it was due, so it wasn't heard. So I would ask you to consider passing this bill, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Question.
Representative Gingrey.
I just wanted to clarify. It was my understanding it was deleting out of the, I went and read it, just the reporting part. The audits actually stay. I think this comment was made that the audits went away. The audits stay. Only thing that's coming out is the reporting requirement back to Joint Minerals. I think they get the reports all the time, and they really don't need to be seeing them. So all that's going away is the reporting, not the audit part.
Representative Kasperik.
Thank you for the clarification. That is correct. It's just the reporting part that will be repealed.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 76 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 76 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 5, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to state lands regarding improvements. This bill was sent to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Swanitzer, Dan, excused, Hunt, signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlek?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 5 do pass. I'll turn the explanation over the bill to our good colleague from House District 34.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill is an act relating to state lands, providing for separate improvements on state lands. Long existing state statute and Board of Land Commissioner rules have allowed a grazing or agricultural lessee to make lease-related improvements up to a specified value without the prior approval of the board. And for an improvement made in excess of this of the cap of $2,000 without prior board approval, the lessee is not entitled to compensation should he lose the lease to a higher bidder in a conflicting lease application. This bill is to make it very clear what that is. A lessee of state land shall have the right to construct improvements upon state lands in an amount not to exceed $2,000 for per section for each separate improvement without first obtaining permission. But if he desires to make improvements in an amount more than $2,000, he needs to file an application for permission with the director, and the director shall have authority to grant permission for that improvement, and that's an improvement per section for each separate improvement. And that those improvements would be maybe fencing, water development, livestock handling facilities, and range enhancements. If he's made that application and he's been granted the approval, then at the expiration of the lease, the improvements would become property of the state, but he would be able to remove those improvements within 120 days. If he did not apply for the improvement in the amount of over $2,000, he would not be entitled to any compensation. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlek's motion, Chairman Semlek's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 5 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 5 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 6, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to agriculture and animals regarding animal damage management reports. This was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Gamel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Swanet, Sudan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 6 do pass. I'll briefly explain the bill. There's a dual reporting requirement within the Animal Damage Management Board. Currently, one of those requirements is for the board to report by the end of the year of each year to determine the progress the board has made towards achieving the goals and objectives it has established. The second reporting requirement is to include all actions taken to accomplish for the accomplishments and state monies expended by each county prior to management board participating in state funding. Mr. Chairman, this just combines those two reporting requirements into one report, and that is the bill. Is there any more discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlek's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 6 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Senate File 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 4, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to elections, military, and overseas voters. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 4 do pass. And the good gentleman from District 29, I think, would like to present the bill. And you'll notice this is not a blue copy, so there are no amendments.
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. The explanation of the bill is really in two parts. The one part is the official ballot for the primary and general election. The county clerk will be 40 days before election, and the change on that is to have the military people receive it in advance. So you'll note on page 2, line 10, it's changed to 45 days before the election. The second part that is important for the consideration of the body is found on page 2, line 20, where the subsection is inserted in which electronic balloting is approved under the rights of the Uniform and Overseas Citizen Absentee Voting Act of the United States, number 42. I urge your adoption of the measure.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 4 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 3, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to campaign finance organizations. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson, signed, Representative Stubson, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway, or Vice Chairman Stubson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 3 do pass. And I would further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 3. And I'll go ahead and proceed and explain both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment. Members, you may remember just over a year ago there was a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court that discussed whether corporations, whether it be corporations, individuals, partnerships, whatever, can make direct expenditures in support of a campaign or an issue that are not tied to the candidate. So, for example, a corporation could go out there and advertise on behalf of a campaign as long as they didn't do so in coordination with the candidate. The problem is that our laws are inconsistent with that finding by the Supreme Court, and the large section of this bill simply brings our law into compliance with that Supreme Court decision. And you'll see on pages 2 and 3 that we changed the language just to preclude that they cannot directly aid a campaign or an issue, so you can't directly give to a political campaign, but that retains the right to do your own independent expenditures as allowed by the Supreme Court case. The meat of the discussion in both committee and down the hall when they dealt with the bill has been on the difficult issue of disclosure in the context of corporations making these expenditures or partnerships or what have you. And that's where the Standing Committee Amendment comes in. And what it does is it strips out the reporting requirements that are in there on page four and five, and there was a provision in here that basically said if these guys do an ad,
you would have to not only identify who was doing the ad, but also list the top three donors, or not really donors, but the top three sources of money for that ad. And there was a lot of discussion about when you have a radio ad, if you have to do the party as well as all the contributors, that by the time you're done with that, you don't have any space for the ad. And so we sort of scratched our heads, and the result is the Standing Committee Amendment. And what it does is, instead of it does require, and it reinstates the stricken language on 12 through 14 on page 4 that requires that the communication actually announce the name of the party paying for the advertising. But then it goes a step further, and in section H of Standing Committee Amendment, pages 1 and 2, it requires that those folks making those independent expenditures have to file a report that identifies that they've made the expenditures, and they have to do that 7 days before the primary, general, or special election. And then they also have to include disclosure of any source of funding in excess of $1,000. And that is sort of the meat of the Standing Committee Amendment, and maybe I'd take questions on the Standing Committee Amendment or move for the question if there are no questions on the amendment.
The question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions on the bill, that was really the meat of it. The rest of it is the easy part, but I'd take any questions on the rest of the bill.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question. In most of the ads that you see in television or in radio, at the end of the ad you say, this is so-and-so and I approve this ad. Does this bill require that the people or the artificial being sponsoring a corporate ad, does this bill require them to say the ad or the opposite, or does it require them to identify themselves?
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those circumstances where you have to stand and actually say, I support this ad, that's a federal requirement. So that's not one found in our state. But what we do require of these organizations is what we require of all of us when we do our own ads, and that is to identify who's actually paying for the ad. And that's the reinsertion of the stricken language that we just did with the Standing Committee Amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The consequences of not enacting this act are fairly serious, in that it's a civil rights denial, and people can sue the state of Wyoming for 1983 violations and collect their attorney's fees. As a result of that, the law firm consisting of an attorney from Albany County, an attorney from Natrona County, and an attorney from Campbell County on behalf of the chairman of the Senate Corporations Committee filed a lawsuit declaring our statute invalid that will be argued this month in front of the Wyoming Supreme Court, the object being to prevent that. But it's important that we don't rely on our Supreme Court to prevent those kind of liabilities, and so this bill is fairly important for addressing those potential liabilities. And I thank the good representative from Natrona County for volunteering to argue in front of the Supreme Court that case.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 3 do pass, say aye. All those opposed, say no. Senate File 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 20. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 20, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to elections, election code revisions. This bill was sent to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions. which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stepson. Excused, Illaway, sign representing Stepson, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do this even though I was excused from the committee. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 20 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments. Ladies and gentlemen, you will note that the Corporations Committee is the committee that the Secretary of State's office comes to with all election code, either additions or adoptions or deletions or whatever, and this is one of those that we worked on in the interim. You'll notice that on the front page, this is a long list of items that were put into this election code revision. And you'll also notice on page 2 under section 1, those sections of the election code that were amended. And we'll just kind of walk through quickly through the bill, and then I will also call, Mr. Chairman, let me call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Question being called on the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 20 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we take a look on page 2, we talk about further action by nominees or the candidates nominated in major party precinct committee men and committee women elected at a primary election shall be deemed nominated or elected without further action. In addition, each write-in candidate nominated, you're nominated at a primary election, you're not elected. So that's a change. We talk about the independent partisan candidates form, and you'll notice that on page 3, petition for nomination, we've added on line 8 and line 9, commissioner or other district office, and then on line 9, commissioner or other. That follows over on page 4, where we're talking about, this is the petition for nomination. And we've taken out some of the language, the eligible registered electors supporting my nomination and so forth. This is where you sign your petition. The verification of circulators is on the bottom of page 4. On page 5, we talk about qualifications and numbers of signers required for a statewide partisan office. You'll notice that's new language. A petition shall be signed by registered electors. The new language on the center of page 5, for a countywide partisan office, a petition shall be signed by registered electors resident in the county and eligible to vote. Bottom of page 5, for a district partisan election, a petition shall be signed. We go over to page 6. We talk about qualifying as a write-in candidate. And there's new language there that talks about candidates whose votes did not affect the nomination who wish to have their votes counted. And on page 11 is that section that is discussed. And that is 2216-106, which is a section entitled Write-In Candidates. Each notification, you'll notice in the middle of page 11, each notification provided under this section shall inform the write-in candidate that failure to timely respond will result in forfeiture of nomination. On page 7, we're still talking about delivering ballots to qualified applicants. We talk about, on page 7, examination of absentee ballot affidavit. Page 8, delivery of ballots and stamps. There are no stamps anymore, and the breaking of seals. The seal is still there, but the stamps are not, so it's, the language is ballots shall be delivered under seal. On page 9, official marking of paper and absentee ballots. Before delivering a paper ballot to an elector, a judge of election or county clerk shall initial the ballot. Spoiled ballots on the bottom of page 9 talks about those ballots that are returned because they were spoiled. They're canceled by a judge. On page 11 on the top, we notice that we're talking about the write-in candidates. On page 12, we talk about vacancies in other offices and temporary appointments. And we're talking about any vacancy in any other elective office in the state except representative in Congress or the Board of Trustees of a school or community college district shall be filled by the governing body or as otherwise provided in this section by appointment of a temporary successor. The person appointed shall serve until a successor for the remainder of the unexpired term is elected at the next general election and takes office on the first Monday of the following January, provided if a vacancy in a four-year term of office occurred in the term's second or subsequent years after the first day for filing an application for nomination pursuant to Wyoming statutes. No election to fill the vacancy shall be held, and the temporary successor appointed shall serve the remainder of the unexpired term. We talk about, on page 13, candidates nominated certificate of nomination. The chief election officer shall notify a write-in candidate who has been nominated for election within 48 hours after the canvassing board meets. Notification may be made by the United States Postal Service, any generally accepted business document delivery method, and it goes on about how they are notified. Lines 14 through 21, vacancies and nominations, were part of the amendment, and so they're deleted. On page 15, we talk about the adoption of by the governing body or submission to electors. The ordinance proposed may also be submitted to a vote of municipal electors at a primary or general election only if a valid initiative petition is received not less than 110 days before the election, if for a primary, and not less than 70 days before the election, if for a general election. And on the bottom of page 15, ordinance adopted by governing body subject to referendum vote. On 16, we talk about electioneering too close to a polling place. Electioneering too close to a polling place or absentee polling place when voting is being conducted. That was new language that was put in, consists of any form of campaigning, including the display of campaign signs or distribution of campaign literature, the soliciting of signatures, and so forth. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the bill, and I'd call for the question.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 20 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to the Paramutual Commission. This bill is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, No, Yeagy, signed Representative McComey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, the good lady from the center of the state, Natrona County, was going to carry this bill, and she's not here, so I will attempt to carry the bill.
Thank you, Chairman McComey.
First, I'd like to read in the Standing Committee Amendment. And the Standing Committee Amendment goes on page 1, line 3, and it inserts after the semicolon, providing for rulemaking. It goes into, on page 2, the top of, on line 2, after participant, put in as defined by commission rules and regulations. And that would be this. If you, I'd like to call for the question on this, then I'll explain the bill. I have a standing committee amendment that's a technical correction. I mean a regular committee of the whole amendment to that also goes with this. So I'd call a question on a standing committee amendment.
Question hasn't been called. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 27 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, which is a technical correction on page 1, line 2, after in, insert horse racing or.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, the heading of this bill really tells what it's about. What it's about is that right now everybody that works in the horse racing has to be licensed and be permitted. And that would include the people in the stables that are cleaning up the stables and everything else. When the intent was all of the people dealing with the pari-mutuel betting, if you will look on the bottom of page 1, line 15, it says each permittee, participant, and employee of a permittee or participant who is directly involved in the horse racing or pari-mutuel wagering activities of the permittee or participant, as defined by commission rules and regulations, shall be licensed by the commission and shall comply with all rules and regulations. And that's what this is about. This is to make it so that these types of people don't have to go through all the licensing and permitting and everything, and there's a fee for those. But those that are going to be dealing with the actual wagering and the rest of that part of it do have to be licensed. And so that is the first part of the bill. The second part of the bill raises the steward's authority to fine from $200 to $1,000 those people that violate the rules and regulations or other statutes in the pari-mutuel betting statutes. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Childers. Question. Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question. Here we've got a bill on pari-mutuel, and I understood that we only had one track and they're not operating. And so why do we have to do all this stuff for an outfit that isn't operating? I mean, I don't think that if there's no horse racing, there wouldn't be any stewards and so forth. So maybe you can explain that.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we do have this can take place other places, but the fact remains we have a statute. The purpose is to bring the statute around. This was a request that came from the commission. We do have the commission that oversees many more things than just pari-mutuel racing, and they're looking to clean up their statutes and do some of these things. So I hope that satisfies the question from the good gentleman from the city in which we're standing right now.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rise in support of this bill. It is something that's already been discussed. This cleanup language is being brought at the behest of the commission. In addition to that, we do have one horse racing track right now. It's kind of in a status what needs to be done. But we think there's a good possibility still. There may be some races this summer. It remains to be seen at this point in time, but it is still viable, not permanently closed. So I would urge the body to support this legislation.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not only are there the possibility that the track that has been running for the last few years might still possibly have some races, and we hope that they do this year, Wyoming is unique in the aspect that we do have paramutual rodeo events, and I'm involved with a group that is working to put several of those together over the summer as well, and I'm aware of, although not directly involved with, some efforts to reopen the tracks, possibly at Rock Springs, and even maybe further out Gillette and Casper like we used to have.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass. Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, presented by Senator B. Bout. A joint resolution requesting Congress to limit air quality regulation by United States Environmental Protection Agency. This bill is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dave. No, Byrd, Roscoe, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution 6 do pass, and I further move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the Standing Committee Amendment and then the bill.
Chairman Lockhart.
The Standing Committee Amendment is just an insertion on page 5, line 13, where it adds the words after to the joint resolution that asks, the transmittal to the Wyoming Congressional Delegation shall include a statement requesting that the members of the delegation acknowledge receipt of this resolution. Historically, we haven't always gotten things back on our resolutions, and this just puts in the proposed joint resolution a request that nominally is filled, but not always. I'd urge your support of the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1-2, Senate Joint Resolution 6 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Lockhart.
Mr. Chairman, I bring you this joint resolution with a couple of things in background before I talk specifically to the joint resolution. Wyoming has had concerns about EPA's numerous new regulations and processes, and it's been a growing concern for some time. I'd like to use as an example an incident that occurred last fall. It became clear that Wyoming could not change its law to meet a federal implementation plan notice. And so the only action that we could take at that time, this information came to a head in November. The only committee that was still in session and with the authorization to respond to this sort of thing was the Minerals Committee. And if you look in your inbox, there's a letter that was to Senator Enzi, Brasso, Lummis, Congresswoman Lummis, Governor Friedenthal, and Governor Meade. And what it did, it laid out what position that Wyoming was in on this very quick turnaround of processes by EPA. And I would just note, because of what we added as the standing committee amendment to this, we did get responses back from everybody on this list that they appreciated it. And we did it because nobody else was in a position to do that at that time. As a follow-up to that, I'd like to just take you through one scenario that we experienced to give you a feel for how quickly things are moving. And there were three actions taken by EPA in the month of December. EPA found that the Wyoming SIP was inadequate because of lack of authority to regulate greenhouse gases. We have that in our statutes that we can't. And, of course, we couldn't have a special session. We were also between governors. We had a governor-elect that was not yet in the office and a governor that had been here with us for a while but was stepping down. We didn't have much in place, and that helped us generate the letter that we sent to the delegation and to EPA. After they found that our SIP was in it, and SIP is a term, State Implementation Plan, and that's something that we really desire to do. We'd rather have us develop the plans than the federal government. And so the SIP plan was lost because of some timing. And I just want to give you a couple of things on the timing and how we were treated by EPA in this case. The EPA issued what's called a SIP call to change its law. That action was taken on December 1 of 2010 and published in the Federal Register in 2013. The EPA found on December 22nd that our early SIP call was not met, and they therefore took over implementation of these clean air requirements. Just think about those times and what this world was in December last year. Excluding the holidays and that sort of thing, it was about a two-week period for us to conform with a law that we couldn't do unless we had a legislative session and did some things, nor did we have a legislature in session. So that was the kind of treatment we got in that step. During that process, we learned from people who were also being impacted by these federal regulations that we needed to help each other to push back on some of these things that were impacting them. There's a lot of detail on who all is into that, but it's most of the states are now protesting some of these new rules. So with that letter, read it at your leisure, but it outlines in some detail what we were looking at. Now, I'd like to just walk you through the bill. We're requesting Congress to limit air quality regulation, as was in the title on page 1. I'd like to call your attention to page 2 and lines starting on 10 and lines starting on 16. There's never been a study to determine the cumulative effect of the regulatory activity has on the economy. These regulations are coming out with just nothing to show what impact are on the economy. And then additionally, on line 16, the EPA has not performed any comprehensive study on the benefits from the result of the greenhouse gases. I want to touch on a little bit of history that some of you may not have been involved in or had the exposure to. But on line 8, it says, whereas the Wyoming legislature supports continuing improvements in the quality of the nation's air, I would just point out that in the 80s, Wyoming led the nation on clean air approach to our industrial sites. You may recall our requirements were 7 times more stringent than the federal government, and yet the federal government is coming in now and encouraging us to do some things that we can't by statute do and we'll have to push back on. That was just an example, I think, of how we've done it. We had the cleanest air requirements and industrial production in the nation, and yet they're coming to us asking us to do some other things. And I think there are those who believe that there's a big urgency on enacting this clean air things. And so I'd like to read you a news release that was provided to the Minerals Committee just on Monday. And this is, I'll just read it to you. I think that's the easy way. The Arctic Ocean is warming up. Icebergs are growing scarcer, and in some places, seals are finding the water too hot, according to the Commerce Department yesterday from the consulate in Bergen, Norway. Reports from the fishermen, sea hunters, explorers, he declared, all point to radical change in climate conditions and hereto unheard of temperatures in the Arctic zone. It goes on to say, exploration expedition report a scarcity of any ice that has been met as far north as 81 degrees north, 29 minutes, well, that's north, surrounding to a depth of 3,100 feet, showed Gulf Stream still very warm. Great masses of ice have been replaced with monaries on earth and stone. The report continued, while many points well known to glaciers have entirely disappeared. Last paragraph. Very few seals, no white fish are found on the eastern Arctic. The vast shoals that herring and smelt have been never before ventured so far north are being encountered in the old sea fishing, seal fishing area. This report was reported by AP and published in the Washington Post on November 2nd, 1922. My point is this. The federal government has taken some actions to impose rules and regulations that are based on some science that at least some people have concerns about. We're asking the federal government to take a look at those in this resolution, look at the economic impacts of some of the things that they're proposing, and what really steps we should do to correct things if we choose to, as opposed to just this very quick turnaround and push to do things rapidly. I urge your support of the joint resolution.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Chairman, rising in support of the bill and the offer that the good presenter from Natona County suggested a potential amendment. The one thing under the sections 2, 1, 2, and 3 where you call for the promulgation of rules to cease, and then you go on with the proposal that some rule regulation might be had, I would suggest an inclusion that the appropriate congressional committees, that when the promulgation of rules is offered to be made specifically to those committees of Congress in the House and of their Senate, so that they can be notified as to what the purpose and what the content of the promulgation rule process is about to bring forward. EPA, along with many other agencies back there, play games with the time when the notice of when they're going to do it and try to give the congressional committees as short a lead time as they possibly can if they feel that there's any adverse reaction. So I would include that in your statement. Get knowledgeable about how that promulgation process takes place and what it should do to try and at least be sensitive to and be informed as to the complaints of such actions as we're trying to present. Thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would hope the good chairman of Minerals would talk to the representative from District 11 that she was part of a lawsuit brought by the private sector and the public sector was the state of Wyoming against the BLM for the EPA stepping in on air quality in southwest Wyoming for an environmental impact statement. And basically the lawsuit was that they could not interfere with those rules. The EPA couldn't for the Forest Service, and the courts ruled in our favor. So whether it plays a part in all the information, all I can do is suggest that you check into that. That was in the, I think, the mid-90s. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A former member of this body who now works for one of the major coal companies and is based back east and handles their state government relations made some very good observations that I wanted to share with you. Resolutions by state legislatures now have a vital role in the current federal legislative process. American politics has moved in dramatic fashion away from the overreach of Washington, D.C., back to the states, back to the people. Holding Congress accountable requires strong directives from the states. One of the most powerful tools at the disposal of legislators and governors is to utilize resolutions. State resolutions will be difficult for members of Congress to ignore. In brief, resolutions can put steel in the backbone of Congress. In my view, now is the most important time in American history to be a state legislator. Voices in concert from the states to the members of Congress will have great impact. I think that pretty well says my feelings about this, and I know that there are many in this legislature and legislature who have sometimes questioned the time that we spend and the efficacy of our messages to the far east coast, but I think this speaks well for this effort, and I wholeheartedly support it.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you. In conclusion, I'd like to thank the two people who made suggestions that we look into a couple of things, and I will get with those individuals as this joint resolution proceeds. And with regard to that last statement, I was going to share one other thing with you. This is the first joint resolution that I've signed on to and taken to the House. I used to discount them. I would support them and vote for them. But I think that urgency is different now than anything we've seen in years, and it's important that we take steps to show where we are and urge changes in the processes that are now in place.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in light of the compact we had this last year, some of the resolutions have now been tracing copies to these participating states to show them what we're doing, trying to encourage them to take similar action so we would present a more unified front. And I would just appreciate it if the good chairman would look into this with his co-chair and see what he thinks about that.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was another good suggestion, and that one is, in fact, in place, and I think there are resolutions that are similar but customized to their states that are doing about the same thing that we have. And there's a number of 18 have already done something, and there's another 15 or 20 that are in process. It takes time to get some of this stuff done. And I'd appreciate your support of this joint resolution and call for your aye vote.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution 6 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate Joint Resolution 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 35. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 35, introduced by Senator Anderson, an act relating to the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, excused, Brown. Signed, Representative Brechtel, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 35 do pass, and I would turn the explanation over to the representative from District 3.
Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
and Mr. Chairman. And I think I have the blowback we need on all those federal regulations, so get ready for it here. We're going to have our own regulations. I bring you Senate file number 35. You'll soon find out why I'm not asked to present bills very often. Last time I did this, I can't remember what it was, but I think my comment was sometimes a little inaccuracy saves a ton of explanation, and I got chastised for that. But I do know there's a persuasive speech in me somewhere, and I hope this isn't it. I think it's best that I give you a little history, because I know how important this bill is to each and every one of you, and especially to the people that have come all that way to watch this exciting debate. I have to give you the proper perspective, I've got to take you back in time, just a little bit, back to those days of yore, back to that special time that was once upon a time, back to time immemorial where the memory of man runneth not to the contrary, and we gain all the wisdom we have for today. And that history would be this. And I had to confirm some of this, so if I'm inaccurate, you can blame the man that orchestrates the black helicopters for giving me this information. That would be about 150 years ago. A gentleman from the rectangular state to the south ate all but one Democrat in Hillsdale County and fled north. Flash forward about 100 years. About 50 years, a rather famous, I don't know what to call him, he was a soldier, he was a scout, he was a detective, he was a hired gun detective, an assassin, and a scoundrel, and I think he was the last person hung in this fair city in 1903, and of course a famous lawyer in Jackson tried it again 100 years later and acquitted him, and I don't know whether that's going to come up under our exoneration bill or not, but that gentleman was hung, and then flash forward 50 more years. Now, hang on. This will all pull together, okay? I see some of you getting nervous. 50 years ago from a town in, I guess I can use towns now, Lincoln, Nebraska, fled with a girlfriend who was underage, killing people on the way, and a movie, The Natural Born Killers, I guess, memorialized him, and I know a famous singer made a song about it. And he came this direction. Now, those separate instances all ended up one way or another in a small town in central Wyoming. That's where we keep the jackalope. That's a town where all my friends come from to visit me. As you've seen, I've been able to introduce none of them in 4 weeks. So most of them don't know where I am, as a matter of fact. In any event, that small town in 1957 had a gentleman who was a law enforcement officer there. In fact, that was about the time the natural born killer came through our town firing his gun. And this gentleman decided that our police officers in Wyoming required some special training. And that was the beginning of this particular event and the need for what I have to hear for you here today. And my reason for telling this story is all three of those gentlemen were arraigned in a court in Douglas, Wyoming. Indeed, I have a desk that has on the top of it is a piece of marble by which each of them stood during those arraignments 100 years apart. Now, I don't want to add that there was a stall divider in the bathroom, but it nonetheless is now my desktop. And if any of you ever want to come to Douglas, you can see that. I didn't get any autographs. In any event, in that town, beginning in 1957 and coming forward, we have gradually built the Wyoming Law Academy. And that academy has grown into quite the institution. And that institution is in dire need of regulating itself. Now, you know how I feel about rules and regulations. It seems like once we get a good idea, the first thing we do is we institutionalize it, we fund it. And then first thing you know, we've got a whole bunch of people regulating things, and then we have them down here asking for more money. But in this case, this thing has got a 60-year history, or 50-year history at least, and I think it's worth allowing them now to design their own rules and regulations. And for that, this bill was brought by the good senator on the other side and the good gentleman from Converse County and my, from our districts. What the heck is your county? the county of the districts 3 and 4, we co-sponsored this, and I want you to know it's necessary, and it was asked for by the attorney general for the state and the director for that academy. I can go through my long laundry list of reasons why we should have it, but I thought you'd enjoy the history more. In any event, this allows them to establish training hours. It allows them to establish criteria. It allows them to establish standards for the taking of tests and qualifications for various things. And if the representative from District 28 asks me a tricky question, I'm going to be in trouble. In any event, that's it. I'll stand for questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I wish you to call on the other side, because trying to follow something like that is really going to be difficult. But getting down to my question, this facility has been around for a long time, and it's had a lot of rules and regulations. And I'd certainly like to know what prompted this particular piece of legislation that gives this guy almost almost to be the king of the academy, where we train not only municipal police, we train county people, we train probation and parole, we train correction officers, we train all kinds of different people with different courses. And reading this thing, it kind of gives me a little pause to want to know a little bit more about what prompted such legislation.
Chairman Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm truly going to date myself here, because I'm a 1973 graduate of the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy. So I really do, I guess I'm wondering, based on the fine officers, peace officers that have come out of that academy over the years, and I certainly haven't heard of any problems with code of conduct and conducting disciplinary rules for students, but apparently there must be some need to establish rules and regulations. So I guess I am just kind of wondering what has prompted this piece of legislation. This academy's been operating very well for, I think, what'd you say, the last 60 years? And so I am wondering what has prompted to codify all of this, and if there's been some problem that necessitates giving the good director the authority to promulgate rules and regulations. Thank you.
I believe, Representative Peasley, you have an eloquent answer for that.
Oh, yeah. For those of you that care, it was your visit there, Representative from District 28, that got this started, and it was the fear of the representative from Area 54 coming that makes it critical. I can tell you this, that the problem has been very subtle, and it has to do with the number of recruits coming through, and there have been some disciplinary problems, and the interaction between the academy and local law enforcement has made it a problem. And the Attorney General and others have decided it's time it have its own rulemaking capacity. And if you look at this bill, I mean, this wasn't drawn by me, so you can't possibly criticize it. It requires the approval of the Attorney General. And I think as long as we have that kind of oversight, I have to agree. I don't have to agree. No, I won't. I'll just let that go. That has been the problem. That's what's been relayed to me. This institution, you know, the beauty of this is it's grown just almost by its own natural process. We haven't had to encourage it. As we got better, starting back in the dark ages, 70, 71, and moving forward, as we've come forward, this thing has grown just naturally because of the request, that these people be trained. Now, I can tell you that I knew the first director, the old guy back in 57. He had gone back to the place where the FBI folks are trained, or I guess I can say that, I'm not sure. He went back there and saw the need for that type of training. So what he did is he came out, and it just started as a little bitty outfit. They ran it out of the state fair for years. And it just sort of developed kind of in a natural process. The problem is it's now a big organization. And I think that probably it's a good idea to restrain the director of it by having rules in place. At least we know what he's administering and what we're doing. So it seems to be something they want. There has been indications that it's needed. And I see no reason why that large an institution shouldn't have rulemaking authority of some sort. So,
Representative Nichols.
Mr. Chairman, that sounds a lot like saying I don't know. But there are two reasons why this bill is coming forward. One is that several of the recruits were arrested downtown, got into lots of different problems, and they found that they had no way to discipline or take care of those problems when they were acting out of line. And the other reason is because apparently there's a tabletop that's been missing from a certain lawyer's town that showed up at a local bar, and they didn't know where to do with it, and so they had to recover it.
Representative Peasley?
I can't one-up that. Thank you. I'll call question.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the page 2, lines 14 through 17, when you're promulgating rules and regulations on the disciplining the what is termed here as students, I would actually term them as employees of the county sheriff or the town city police that they originated from. So what happens is, a sheriff's department will hire someone to be a deputy sheriff. In many situations, they actually start work for the sheriff because you have to wait until you can come in with the matriculating class into the law enforcement academy. So they are employees of that sheriff, or they are employees of that town or city that is sending them. What I'm curious about, if this person is causing problems, and I've heard what the issues are, there's some times when people on their off time, so they're not on the academy, but just go downtown and we're letting off some steam or something. If they're doing something that is considered to be inappropriate, or these are young folks sometimes, should not the law enforcement academy report that back to their employer who sent them there, meaning the sheriff, and allow the sheriff to take disciplinary action since that's his employee. They're not employees of the law enforcement academy, and give that onus back to the sheriff or the police chief. I'm a little concerned that now suddenly we're going to have the director of the law enforcement academy essentially taking discipline actions on people that are not his employees. That's my concern, and maybe you have an answer for that.
Is there any other discussion? Do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 35 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The citizens of the state of Wyoming got their money's worth out of that last debate. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion carries.
The clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 74, recommended do pass. Senate File 75, recommended do pass. Senate File 76, recommended do pass. Senate File 5, recommended do pass. Senate File 6, recommended do pass. Senate File 4, recommended do pass. Senate File 3, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 20, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 27, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 35, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Byrd, Chairman.
Representative Byrd.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We are at that order of business. Messages from the Senate.
Message 223, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 70, Education Accountability, ayes 30, no 0, signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 224, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, ayes 21, noes 9, signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 225, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 145, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, ayes 21, noes 9, signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 226, Mr. Speaker, excuse me, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 150, notaries, ayes 30, no 0, signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 227, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act, ayes 29, noes 1, signed, Donna Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 89. Respectfully reports the same back to the House with recommendation to pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 94. Engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 128, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Peasley, Throne, no, Brechtel, Nicholas, signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 137, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Peasley, Throne, no, Brechtel, Nicholas, signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 63, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, no, Botten, excuse, Shepperson, signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, To whom is referred Senate File 26 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarburg, Vronish. Noes, Wannitzer, Dave, signed representing Quarburg, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 43 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarburg, Vronish. No, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed representing Quarburg, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 119 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed representing Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 120 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stepson, Zwanitzer, Dan, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Committee announcements. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of the following bills. Senate File 16 engrossed, School Facility Adequate Assessments. Senate File 36 engrossed, Seclusion and Restraints in Schools.
Chairman Corberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, February 10th, 10 minutes after adjournment in room H-17. We will take up bills, Senate File, I don't have my glasses on, 51 engrossed safety belt violations, Senate File 72, Fair Practices of Equipment Act Amendment, and Senate File 115, DUI, Child Endangerment Fines.
Chairman Illway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet about 15 minutes after adjournment at noon, so that some of us can attend the CSG get-together in room 302. But we'll discuss Senate File 14, Counties Election Districts, Senate File 45, Engrossed, Professional Services Procurement, Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees, and we'll begin discussing Senate File 113, Engrossed, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet Friday, February 11th at 7:30 a.m. in room H-10 to consider the following bills. Senate File 47 engrossed, concealed weapons continued from today. And Senate File 48, Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board. And Senate File 62, Large Project Funding.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege, please. Thanks for the go-ahead.
Please proceed.
Just a last reminder, in your in-baskets, you should have gotten an invitation to the legislative pair breakfast tomorrow morning, 6:30, Egg and I, and it will be Duane Trembley and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, 6:30, meals on yourself.
Chairman Brown.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the gallery behind you, I would like to introduce my business partner and the husband of our assistant clerk, Mr. Randy Dancliffe, and his grandson, Randy Dancliffe. Randy, stand up.
Chairman Similek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, February 10th. At 8 a.m. in room H-11 to hear the following Senate files, Senate File 81, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals, Senate File 55, Subdivision, Perimeter, Partition, Fencing, and Senate File 65, Animal Remedies. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 15 minutes upon adjournment today to hear Senate File 59, Engrossed Spice Drugs, Senate File 90, Engrossed Wyoming Nurse Practice Act Amendments, Senate File 25, Engrossed Long-Term Services and Support.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Friday, February 11th at 7:59 a.m. to consider the following bills. Senate File 79, Recreation Safety Act Waiver on behalf of minors. Senate File 134, Liens, and Senate File 138, Child Custody Orders Abandonment.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to let you know that CSG, Council of State Government West, will have their luncheon tomorrow upon adjournment of lunch for any of the Western Leadership Academy alum. So anyone that has attended their leadership program for CSG is invited to have lunch with Mr. Kent Briggs and Mr. Rich Lindsay. And the second thing I wanted to remind all of you of is that traditionally we have the Governor's Prayer Breakfast, which this year will be on February 25th. This is something that we've started many, many years ago in tradition with the National Prayer Day, and our governors have continued to do this tradition. So this will be Governor Meade's first prayer breakfast. It will be on February 25th at 7 a.m. So if you could mark your calendars, you should have received an invitation on your desk, and you can make a donation and have that sent downstairs. Thank you very much.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, what we take for granted, other people crave. Today we had some difficult and complex issues, and we're leaving today, and a debate was conducted with dignity and pride, and we're leaving as friends, which is the way it should be, but in a lot of places it's not. And I just wanted you to take a minute and appreciate that and to remind the people of the state of Wyoming that they can be proud that they've elected true statesmen. With that, General File, tomorrow, Thursday, February 10th, and my intent is to work a little bit long on Thursday so that we can leave early on Friday. But General File, February 10th, first 10 bills, Senate File 21, 24, 67, 68, 77, 18, 26, 42, 43, 120, 135, and 99, and such other bills are on the list that's handed out. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Thursday, February 10th, 2011 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The House will stand adjourned until Thursday, February 10th, 2011, 10 a.m.